the application, and I think, I know that at least Ms. Wingate has a few questions, and some of the other commissioners may have as well for DelDOT. Remind everybody again that DelDOT is not here in favor of or in opposition to this application. They are here as a resource for the commission, and you are welcome to listen in, so there we go.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Todd Sammons. I'm the Assistant Director with Development Coordination. We have our DelDOT team here. I'll do introductions. So we have Pam Steinbach, who was formerly our Director of Planning, and that's the probably the capacity, the role she's in today, because she's actually been named the new Director of Maintenance and Operations. But because of her knowledge and input and experience on this project, we drug her along, maybe to her chagrin. So we've also got Sareem Mutasab, who is our Traffic Impact Study Group Engineer. And we have Joanne Arlano, who is a senior traffic engineer at JMT, which is a transportation engineering firm that supports DelDOT on big projects analysis and traffic analysis, et cetera. So we appreciate the invite to be here today. Obviously, very large project. We've been joking this is probably one of the biggest ones we'll see in our career, at least from a single project, with regards to analysis too. So we appreciate the invite. Happy to be here. We'll do our best to answer all the questions, and if we can't answer them, then we'll get back to you, hopefully, with the answers.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Wingate.
Okay. Aside from the obvious, could you please explain to all of us the impact that the 1922 units, how that would compare to what by right, if they did separate subdivisions at 1200 or 1300, whatever that would be. And also given the fact that they're talking about this, a 24-year span on the track.
So we were only asked that question this morning, okay? And let me say, we'll give the best answer we can right now, but the applicant is actually conducting traffic analysis based on just if they do the single family use. So we don't have the apple to the orange to compare yet. We're actually conducting that. Is that correct, Serene?
Correct. We just received the preliminary traffic impact analysis, and we're reviewing it.
And say that again. You're basing it on?
So I guess that I would call it the by right. I mean, and maybe it's really, maybe I'm not using the right terminology, but if this isn't approved, the applicant has moved forward with a submission that's just based off of the single family use of the by right use based on the zoning. And we're actually undertaking that analysis now. So do we have an apple to compare to an orange yet? No, we do not, because they're just in the early stages of doing the traffic analysis.
And I realize the amount of time it's going to take to figure that out, because really, if somebody, four different people bought four different plots and they all decided to develop it at the same time, then the impact on our roadways is going to be very different than what we're looking at. Am I correct?
It could be. You know, looking at things holistically, even though this was, you know, massive undertaking to do this analysis with 43 intersections and all the committed developments,
right?
You know, collectively, you get to paint a broad picture, and you can do some serious planning on it from a transportation impact. If you break it up into small farmettes or farms that are being developed individually, if they meet the warrants for analysis, of course, we will have them do that. Even if they don't meet the warrants for like a traffic impact study or a traffic operation analysis, we still do some form of analysis on it. But to your point is that if it's piecemealed, then the improvements on the roads could be piecemealed, and then it might not be as holistic. It may be a holistic approach if they come in. It all comes down to timing.
Okay. Another question I have, and this goes back to a question earlier. Are you in support of doing the walkway, the bridge, walking bridge?
So we were all sitting there, and hopefully we weren't too discussing in each other's ears, but just can you further elaborate on where that is?
Bay Woods.
Yeah,
to
so
take
there
the traffic
was a
off of a crosswalk, because in my opinion, they're nightmares.
Yeah, so what DelDOT has done is actually, we extended the trail down to Hudson Road, Route 9, and whatever that side road is, and actually there's pedestrian crossings there, and that's where the trail actually goes now, and the bicyclists will cross there. They're doing it right now. Instead of actually crossing it at, I guess it would have been Cool Springs Road there, because that's where we initially looked at. That's where the idea of the bridge or a tunnel came into play, which it's not technically off the table. This is something that's out of the realm of what we do here, but and if Pam may want to comment on it, but it's not really something that the department's planning right now, I don't believe so.
Yeah, exactly. So we have been, so the crossing right now, you know, is a safe crossing. It's, you know, attenuated, but we do not have any plans to do a DelDOT funded project as part of a bridge or a tunnel, but we, you know, completely are on board with, you know, supporting that if I don't know who that gentleman said, like, about a possible Fed grant for that, but we will not have a, like, DelDOT funded CTP project that is on the books or, you know, planned right now, being that that we do have that, you know, we do have a crossing currently.
Okay.
So we have the at-grade crossing now, but I guess we wouldn't, we would consider it, like Pam said, in the future. Okay. And I think the letter even says something about a reservation from the developer.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And then...
But I will say there's challenges with that, and that's why it hasn't occurred, and that's why...
Overhead lines.
Yes, the department took the initiative to build the path farther down and make the at-grade crossing. Just for one instance, people do not like to go up on bridges, like especially when they're walking or on bikes. Tunnels, you know, from a homeland safety perspective, there's a lot of challenges with both structures.
Yeah, I prefer a bridge versus a tunnel personally. Yep. But I've been in both, and they are very effective as far as the safety on the roadway, so... and then just to elaborate with the other question that I had with the connection on the to the medical center, you wouldn't have any pains with this development connecting a road connecting to that medical center?
No, I was actually excited to hear the question. We fully support interconnectivity within the department as long as it's done in a sound and safe way. There are a lot of times, I think, to the chagrin, the frustration of to, you know, planning and zoning and council and to DelDOT, that interconnections talked about and it's planned for, and then there ends up being public opposition from the development community that the interconnection's going to, and then fire and safety and trash cannot, you know, interconnect the postal services, the medical. So we are totally into it. Now, it has to be designed the proper way, though, to the gentleman's point that you can't have it as being a new cut through because then it could become unsafe.
Right.
But there are ways to mitigate it, and we fully support the interconnections. And that you know, without them, it defeats the purpose of having these planned communities and these things, because then they've got to go back out to Route 9 or Hudson Road, and they have to go in a circuitous manner. So.
Yep. Okay, thank you. That's all I have for now.
None, sir.
Oh.
You may have touched on this, but what's the, generally speaking, this development and RPC versus, you know, what they could do by right, what would you estimate, if you have it, the reduction in trips on Route 9 might be for this type of community where you've got a lot of amenities baked in, possibly employment centers that the people who are actually living there may go to, shopping, et cetera, built into it?
Yeah, so what we call it, and I may pull Joanne up on this, is internal capture. And so if you have a community that has to, you know, if it was all single family homes and they had to go for every amenity, they're all leaving and they're all returning. Whereas if you have multiple uses in a community like this, then we give credit to it, and we can actually calculate what the internal capture of that is, and that actually pulls those trips off the roadway. So there's a huge benefit. We're not here to support, we're neutral, one way or the other, just to make it clear to the public, but there is a huge benefit to having these types of planned communities with the amenities in there from a transportation perspective, because it keeps the traffic, all the traffic off the road, and it captures it internally. It also reduces the vehicular traffic, because a lot of people will just scrap using the car, and they'll get on their bike or they'll walk in those communities, especially when they're planned the right way with regards to the paths and the things that are going to be planned, I think, in this community, as well as what we have required with regards to the rail to the trail and the shared use path. Joanne, is there anything else to add to about the internal capture that I missed?
I think the one thing to keep in mind with internal capture, that the types of uses that internal capture is applied to, that's primarily residential to retail, residential to office, and vice versa. And also restaurants is part of that as well. So not every proposed land use within the development has a, I'll call it, there's a document called the ITE Trip Generation Manual. That manual doesn't have internal capture for all the uses. So just something to keep in mind when that is taken into account.
Perfect, thank you very much. I don't have any other questions.
Mr. Butler.
I'm good, sir.
Okay, Mr. Whitehouse?
No, for me, thank you.
Seth? Anything? No. Counselor?
Just, because we get this all the time, and maybe you can, I think it's a benefit to explain sort of a little bit how the TIS works. There's always sort of a question or criticism about whether the TIS is a snapshot in time and whether it captures, you know, future development, whether it's been approved and not yet built or in various stages of approval. Maybe if you all could just talk about that a little bit. I think it's
sure, helpful. And I'm going to either pull Serene or Joanne up here too with this. Obviously, everything is time sensitive, and you have to be able to do the analysis. You have to pick a certain time and a build out, and we are dependent somewhat on the developer to tell us, you know, what their schedule is. In this case, it was 2044, but I think they've probably adjusted it to be more maybe realistic now to say 2048 for full build out. We heard during their presentation, but I will say that you know when we do the counts, they have to be at a certain time, and you have to do it so that you can actually start doing the analysis. So things have to stop, right? Eventually, you can't just. But we do apply growth. Annual growth factors.
My question, yeah. Like growth factors.
Sure.
That's in
we do seasonal adjustment factors depending on when the counts are taken because you don't want to do counts when it's maybe in the middle of winter when we have seasonal, as we do down here at the beach area. So then we would apply a seasonal adjustment factor. We'd apply growth factors to it that would actually grow it out. And those growth factors take into account the growth that's going to occur over the years, as well as we do committed developments, too. And we'll add in as many committed developments as we know. And then sometimes people will say, well, you missed this one. Well, it takes a time to do analysis of this magnitude, and maybe it was proposed after the fact. Because but we try to account for all the committed developments we know about, add the growth factors in. And the growth factors actually take into account build out, too. So even if you missed a committed development, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not accounted for. It's just accounted for in the growth factors. Joanne, is there anything or Serene that I should add to this or you want to add to it related to what I just said?
I'm good.
Okay.
And I can just note, so Todd did a great job at kind of explaining that the TIS, the developer-focused specifics as to what they're required to do. We also, as part of DelDOT, since we do maintain nearly 90% of the roads, that we do like large-scale planning studies as well. And one of them specifically in this area is the coastal corridors. And that is, we did get have the final report done, but what we're also doing is we know that there is a lot of growth in this area. We know that the Henlopen TID is, right to the east. So we are, we did that formalized analysis, but we didn't just stop and, that's the last document and we're not going to analyze anything anymore. We have a constant, we're going to be doing more counts, we're going to be doing more forecasting. So it really is a monitoring entity that, like, we're going to be on the pulse of all the new developments that are happening, as well as trying to, like, really hone in on, growth factors are, it's like, I am not a traffic engineer, I'm a roadway one, so I always call it like the black box. There are so many factors that go into it, like the population, the number of households, the jobs, so all of that goes into it. But we are doing our monitoring with the coastal corridors, and we're also including stakeholders throughout the area just to make sure that we get that grassroots input as well. So the county is part of it. There are business owners that are part of it, EMS, so they can input that on the ground, seeing issues or potential issues as well. I think that's all I had on that.
That actually sort of leads into, I think, and maybe you answered it, but the coastal, there was, you know, when this, because this project's been around a while, and at the county we had heard that, you know, we should wait till the coastal corridor study's completed, this and other projects, frankly. You know, and I know in the meantime there's the TIS that's specific to this project. Maybe just describe how those two documents work with each other. You know, who's the one to answer that? But, you know, we've got the TIS. It's independent from the coastal corridor study. What's the coastal corridor study mean for this project or this commission's or the county's decision, you know, the interplay between the two? Because I think there's, I'm not sure I understand that, and there's probably confusion among others.
No, I completely understand. So the TIS is really, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is really putting the developer on the hook for certain infrastructure that they are responsible for due to them, you know, negatively impacting part of the transportation system. But they are not going to be, you know, they're just one cog in like the all of the developments that are happening, not just in this specific area, but countywide. So it's DLDOT's job as part of the, you know, doing our long-range planning is to, you know, not only like we take into account the what the traffic is now for people who have moved here, then we take into account like what has been approved. So we take into those counts, and then we, you know, have a pulse on what the, you know, potential developments are. But all of that, including the population rates, that background, you know, just the fact that if no more developments like came in, there would still be migration growth, like infilling. So that's the purpose of the DLDOT, you know, study with coastal corridors is to really look in a regional way to see how it's affecting the whole transportation system and not just, you know, so like Queens is responsible for these requirements, like North Star is responsible, you know, well, they have to do their entrances, but they have to pay a large fee into the TID. There could be a project over on 113 that like they have to rebuild a whole intersection. So our planning division takes into account that longer, like forecasting out to around like 2050 and beyond.
Okay, all right. Thank you. That was helpful to explain how the two of those relate to each other. That's for me anyway.
Yeah, I think to add to that too is Pam did an excellent job. But the cog in the wheel is a great example. We attack the analysis and monitoring the roadways and the infrastructure from multiple sections and multiple approaches, and they overlap each other. And just like this letter, you know, for Cool Springs, it mentions all these studies that occurred. It mentions the TID. It mentions the corridor study. All these things that mentions the CTPA projects that are there. Well, they're doing studies, and we've got studies in planning, and we've got the individual study for the TISs. So they all overlap each other, and they're all attacking the same, you know, issue is traffic mitigation with regards to and growth and those types of things. So it's not just our group working, but it's multiple groups. And that's why it's so somewhat cumbersome to pull these letters together, because we've got to coordinate with all these sections within DLDOT that are looking at it. So hopefully that helps explain it a little bit too, and reassures people that it's not just our group. There's multiple groups in DLDOT looking at it from multiple different views.
Thanks.
And I was wrong earlier. I did have one other question.
Sure.
It's going to rhyme with a question I asked about the last project that came before us that was similar. So Route 9 dualization timeline. What do we think that is? Could you refresh our memories?
Yes. So there are two. The two projects in the CTP go from one being Old Vine, SR1 to Old Vine. That construction is supposed to start in FY 2016. 7, and then the Route 9 dualization between Old Vine, so it's kind of picking up where that stops, out to Derry Road. That preliminary engineering is slated for FY 2027 and 2028, but we don't have a construction timing on that yet, just because it's, you know, kind of, we want to get the PE done, the like engineering done, then we have to go through the right-of-way acquisition process. We have to do the utility relocation. So that's, so currently the CTP projects that are in there for Route 9 are those two. As I said, the coastal corridors monitoring, doing this, like keeping the pulse, is really what we're looking at to see when it is going to be, you know, if and when it's going to be required to dualize 9 further west. You know, the big elephant in the room is Route 9 and 5. That is a intersection that, you know, poses a lot of constraints, you know, just based on the sensitive areas on those corners. We have a cemetery, and there's a few. So that is, you know, kind of like that pinch point. So we are going to, but it's like it's complex problems, and it that is one of the like hardest things that we're going to have to tackle. So we will be looking more like with the constant monitoring and analysis, we have to start to look into possibilities of, you know, what we're going to do at that in an intersection. But we do know, we are 100% aware of the concerns that people have. We understand the growth in the area. We know that, you know, that's why we're trying to keep monitoring and have the most up-to-date counts and forecasting. It's just trying to catch up and balance that, wanting to have growth and, you know, wanting to, because transportation projects take a very long time to get in the ground. I'm rambling. I'll stop.
thank you so much. I do think that, you know, the public probably, like I am, you know, concerned that the property that you might need to acquire is going to be developed on.
Yeah, so that's a great point you bring up, and that's what I was circling over here, is item 21 in the traffic impact study, that developers should enter an agreement DLDOT for right-of-way reservation along Route 9 site frontage to allow for the potential future U.S. Route 9 widening. Yes. While we may not know, and this happens a lot, unfortunately, or maybe it's fortunate, we might not know exactly how much right-of-way we need, but as they go through the approval process, those are the things that will work out, and if we can't know exactly, then we will project, and we'll get those reservations as we go, and then ultimately the property would be acquired when the dualization or whatever the widening that occurs out there in the future.
Yeah. Absolutely true.
So we try to plan for it, I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely true for this project.
Yes.
You kind of got boxed into a corner at the intersection that you were mentioning earlier, and more development kind of is happening adjoining some of that corner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's completely true. But, you know, we've had great partners with you guys, like, you know, Jamie and his staff want to know what that right-of-way width is. So we have been, you know, I think we're close, if not there. But we, you know, we're working on the Route 9 dualization to the east, so we have a very good idea as to what that footprint is going to be. So it is extremely important to kind of make sure, we make sure that we put it in our TIS analysis, you know, for that information that you guys can then, you know, put forth in requirements or stipulations or what it does. But the developer was fine with, right, doing that, yeah, reservation. Well, they accepted it, so I assume so.
thank you so much.
Yeah.
Just real quick, Mr. Sammons, so I'm not rifling through the TIS. What number was that? I know it's in there that you just mentioned where that.
Item 21.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Serena's off the top of her head.
Thank you.
Yep.
That's all I had.
Okay, any other questions for DLDOT? All right, well, thank you very much. Stick around if you can. I know you have other things to do because we've got a good deal more to go here, and we may need you back here.
Sure thing. Okay? Happy to help.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, everyone's been